immediately the force of gravity, but for the engines to pull it up, it takes a long time and it needs an awful lot of energy and time and effort. And this is one of the greatest robbers we have of our faith. The other robber, which is just as dangerous, is bad company. Bad company. Baha'u'llah has told us that we must associate with the godly, with the people, and eschew fellowship, he says. These are his own words. Eschew fellowship with the ungodly. Now, the ungodly does not mean a person who doesn't believe in God. Remember that. Oh, no. The ungodly is a person who comes between you and Baha'u'llah and who says to you, well, look, you are a Baha'i, okay, but let us go and do this, let us go and do that. Directs you to do things against the teachings of the faith. I've seen many people who become Baha'is, young people especially. The young people are more targets for this, much more than the older ones, in schools, in colleges, in society. I've seen some young people who come into the faith with great joy and excitement, and after a month you hear, where are they? Oh, well, this boy had a friend and is involved with a friend, and that's it. He's gone. The friend has pulled him the other way. The ungodly does not mean a person who doesn't believe in God, is agnostic or atheist. The ungodly may be a person who confesses in a very religion in a very sincere way. But a person who is an agnostic and an atheist may not be an ungodly person. He may be a very good person. And in fact, most of them are very honest people, very good. Most people who become agnostics or atheists, I think they're very honest people. They find that religion has been so misrepresented and so distorted in their ways by those who confess to have a religion that they have just said, we don't want this. This is very honest. So, this is the second dangerous thing that could rob us of our faith, really. We have seen amongst the young people, so many young people who have been destroyed, completely gone away because of this bad company, completely destroyed. People who were brought up even as Baha'is. And then the bad company, they got in contact with so many bad associates, and then they took them away. And the other one, finally, the third one, another thing which I'm sure doesn't happen in America, it's gossip. Really, backbiting. This is something which is, we must always talk good of the people. Always talk good of the people. Talking with people. Somebody said, when do we draw the line? We can always talk about people, but when can we say it is backbiting? You know, sometimes you talk about people. When does it become backbiting? I thought, I said to him, when you begin to enjoy it, it becomes backbiting. You know. Really, that's what happens. These three things, I think, are just enough for us to concentrate on these points and try to guard ourselves against this. We must always talk good of the people. Beautiful. Every Baha'i is so beautiful because the power of faith is working within that person. Because as I said this morning, well, we are related to Baha'u'llah. I am only related to him by name. That's all I can say. But that's a tremendous honor, tremendous. Well, now, having said this, let us go a little bit to the subject of the covenant. I wanted to mention maybe about half an hour here and talk about covenant. Again, yesterday we touched upon this. I mentioned that Baha'u'llah brought for us a great ocean of his revelation, a real ocean. In the dispensations of the past, the manifestations of the past, they brought also the Word of God. But in relation to what Baha'u'llah has brought in this day, it was not an ocean, it was a small pond, you might say. But they brought the water of life. Every one of the prophets of God who have come, they bring with them the water of life. And that water of life, when they are alive, when the manifestations of God are alive and they are with man and they are walking with man and talking with man, that water of life is fresh. It's like rain. You know, the word of God is like the coming of rain. When the rain comes, you become refreshed by it directly. You know, it comes to you and hits you directly. You become refreshed by it directly. But when the rain stops, when the manifestation of God is no longer with us. That water is accumulated then in a pond. That's where you get your water of life. But he is no longer there to rain upon you. He's gone. Christ was here for 3 years. Muhammad was for 23 years. And what he left behind was the Quran, for instance, which became like the pond from which all the people could go and receive this water of life. In Christianity, we have the Gospels, which is the repository of the words of Christ. And it is like a pond of water to which people, the saints and scholars of Christianity, went to it. They took this water of life and they took it away and distributed it and gave this water of life to everyone. This is how other religions grew. In this dispensation, Baha'u'llah has brought an ocean for us, really an ocean. But in the past, when the Prophet passed away, he left this water of life free to people to use it the way they wanted it, which meant that everybody was free. If you have a pond of water in your house and hundreds of people are at it, what will happen to that water of life, to that water? It will become adulterated, because everybody pushes his pots and pans in it and washes things into it, and after a while that water loses its purity. It's adulterated. This is what happened to older religions. The founder of the faith brought the water of life, but he left it freely to his followers. He said, "Here it is. This is for you." And the followers really so much adulterated it. They added things to it, to the word of God. They took away things from the word of God. They interpreted the word of God the ways. They pulled it into pieces the way they did it. And so they created sects and divisions. They adulterated it. And now we look at these religions, there are hundreds of sects. It's because man has had the freedom to use this. Now, Baha'u'llah has done entirely a new thing altogether, which the prophets of the past had not done. Now, why they didn't do it now, this is an important point. You must not think that the prophets of the past did not know. Baha'u'llah, as you know, has given us a covenant, firm covenant. He has put a wall around this great ocean, and he said nobody has the right to touch it, nobody has the right to interpret it. The other manifestations of God didn't do this. You mustn't say, "Oh well, they didn't do it because they didn't know." This is far from the truth. The reason they didn't do it was because mankind in those days were not mature enough to be held responsible. Because once you have a covenant, you will have to be responsible. In the same way that I was giving you the example of a child rolling in mud, coming back with his new suit of clothes, he rolls in mud and he comes home. Well, he's not to be held responsible. Only when he grows up, you can give him responsibility. You give him a new suit of clothes, he goes back, he goes out, but if he rolls in mud, as I said, he will be in trouble. So you see, mankind had not reached the age of maturity to be able to hold on to the terms of a covenant, which is very disciplinary in its nature. You do not have to interpret the words of God. This is a great discipline. But in the past, they did. And so different religions in the past were divided into sects. And yet those sects grew together. For instance, in Christianity, you'll see that in the early days, the Christian faith was divided into 3 or 4 major sects. But each sect grew upon the tree of Christianity. Each one drew its sustenance from it. You couldn't say one of them didn't draw the sustenance from the teaching of Christ. It was like a tree which had several branches. But today it's different, very different. There is only one branch, and anyone who deviates is cut off. And when you cut it off, you don't have to fight it. It'll dry by itself. Now, in this dispensation, as I said, Baha'u'llah has brought for us an ocean of revelation. But he did not give that revelation to us directly and say, "All right, this is my revelation, I brought it for you, I give it to you." He didn't do that. He brought it for us, but he didn't give it to us. I think I've mentioned that somehow in passing yesterday, in reference. He didn't give it to us. He gave it instead to the person of Abdul Baha. And Abdul Baha became the container of the revelation of Baha'u'llah. All the forces of the revelation of Baha'u'llah were placed within Abdul Baha to such an extent that he had the powers of the manifestation. Although he was not a manifestation of God, he had the powers of the manifestation. It's like the moon. When you look at the moon, it has light, and it is beautiful light, but it is not of itself. It has not a light of itself. It is reflected upon it. Whereas the sun, like a manifestation of God, has its own light and its own heat. Abdul Baha here is like the moon, which gives light. By virtue of being the container of the revelation of Baha'u'llah, he had all the powers of the manifestation conferred upon him. He knew what was in your heart, just as Baha'u'llah knew. And he had all the powers. And his words, although is not the word of God in that sense, but it has the same validity as the words of Baha'u'llah. In fact, in one sense, his words are more authentic than those of Baha'u'llah. Did you ever think of that? The words of Abdul Baha could be more authentic than the words of Baha'u'llah. For example, if you ever come across a statement that Baha'u'llah has made a statement, say, and Abdul Baha says this, really, he may make a statement completely opposite to it, which one would you take? The words of Baha'u'llah or the words of Abdul Baha? You don't take the words of Baha'u'llah. You take the words of Abdul Baha because he is the interpreter of the word. So in that sense, his words become more authentic if they seem to be contrary to it, because he is giving us an interpretation which we may not even understand, but it is he who can interpret for us. Yes? Yes, yes, of course. The words of Shoghi Effendi are the same thing, because he is the interpreter of the word of God. But this is very rare that this may happen. This is very rare. But if it has happened, there are some cases. I'll give you an example of it. Baha'u'llah's secretary has written, he said that Bab and Baha'u'llah had met out physically in Tehran. It is in one of the tablets which Mirza Awa John, Baha'u'llah's secretary, has written. And you know, Baha'u'llah's secretary did not write anything of himself. Everything that he was written, it was dictated to him, even though it appears in his own as if it is his own composition, but it was all composed by Baha'u'llah, everything that he has written. Now Abdul Baha says they never met personally, individually. So whose words we take? We take the words of Abdul Baha. See, this is how we have to understand this. Now, I was saying that Abdul Baha in here becomes the container of the revelation of Baha'u'llah. And yesterday, those of you who were here, I was describing how Baha'u'llah is like the summit of a mountain, and Abdul Baha being a servant that no other human being on this earth can reach him, as low as Abdul Baha in servitude. He's the lowest of all in servitude. He's like a valley. Baha'u'llah like the summit of a mountain, and Abdul Baha like a deepest valley. And so when the water pours down from the top of the mountain, it accumulates in the lowest valley. And so all the forces of the revelation of Baha'u'llah are accumulated within the person of Abdul Baha. And then there is another thing you must remember, that the center, if I wanted to put water in this glass, and the water is pure, this glass must be empty. If it is not empty, when I pour water in it, it's going to be adulterated. And Abdul Baha was that empty of his own self. He had no will of himself. He submitted his will to that of Baha'u'llah completely, utterly. And so he was a stainless mirror, as Shoghi Effendi describes him, a stainless mirror which reflected the light of Baha'u'llah in perfection. If the mirror is not stainless, it will not be able to reflect it fully. And so it was a completely empty and pure vessel in which Baha'u'llah poured his revelation within it, the forces of his revelation. And you must not think also that Abdul Baha
tried very hard and tried to become a very outstanding person as it was, and emptied himself. In a sense he did, maybe, I don't know. But he was certainly not a human being like you and I. He was created for this purpose by God. It was a gift of Baha'u'llah to mankind. It was a part of the revelation of Baha'u'llah. In the same way that revelation comes from Baha'u'llah, and it is from God who sends it to us. Abdu'l-Bahá was also a gift of God to mankind. He had the makings of being pure and empty of self. And so he was a perfect exemplar for the teachings. Now, Abdu'l-Bahá, during the 29 years of his ministry, he enriched the Baha'i writings. The revelation of Baha'u'llah was enriched by it. He expounded it, he explained it to us, he put it in simple words for us, he guided us, he helped us how to live up to those teachings. And then, of course, as you know, here comes the story of self again, comes up. This ambition, this ego, is the greatest enemy. There were people who had ego, great ambitions to become leaders. And when Baha'u'llah passed away, and Baha'u'llah told us very clearly in his will and testament, he said, everything I have brought is within Abdu'l-Bahá. I'm paraphrasing his words, or paraphrasing the thought even. But this is what he said really. Turn to him for anything you want. Outside him there is nothing. And yet, there were some ambitious men who as soon as Baha'u'llah passed away, thought now the field is open for them. And they wanted leadership, just like religious leaders. You know, today we have plenty of them. This shouldn't be a surprise to us. Today the world is full of leaders. Everybody wants to become leaders. So you see how much, we have a lot of ambitious men. Now, I'm not saying that in government, whatever they do, it's not our problem. They're not worried about that. They are all ambitious. Okay, let them be. And I don't think that it is bad to be ambitious in your work. Why not? You want to be, if you're doing any work, why don't you? We should do it in such a way that we become distinguished. We progress. We go higher up in your work. This is not a bad thing, provided we do it in the right way. And not to try to kill a lot of people on the way, but do it in the right way. A Baha'i who is working, whatever your profession, you must try to perfect it. You must try to be distinguished. If you are an engineer, be a distinguished engineer. If you are a doctor, be a distinguished doctor. If you are an administrator, why not? But we are saying in faith, in the faith of God, there is no room for ambition. And these ambitious men wanted to become leaders. There were so many of them. So many of them. And most of them were outstanding teachers of the faith, who thought this is the opportunity to rise up and break up this faith, like the old days, into sects. And so they began to attack the center of the covenant, like men who come to attack this great wall which Baha'u'llah has placed around this ocean. They wanted to get through to this ocean, but they didn't succeed. And at the same time, I can tell you, it brought so much suffering to the person of Abdu'l-Bahá that not until you study the history of that period, and maybe I don't think that history is yet really compiled, of the history of covenant breaking during the time of Abdu'l-Bahá, in English anyhow. When you read that history of the covenant breaking and the sufferings which were inflicted upon Abdu'l-Bahá, you will not believe it. The things that they did. How much they went, these Abdu'l-Bahá's brothers, his family, the family of Baha'u'llah, they all rose up against him. Every one of the members of the family of Baha'u'llah, with the exception of a very few, rose up against Abdu'l-Bahá. And then, hand in hand with some very outstanding teachers of the faith, for many years, not only misrepresentations, but so many times they plotted to take his life. They did everything to humiliate, to misrepresent, and to dishonor him all the time. This was going on, the intrigues were going on all the time. Now it's beyond the scope of our discussions here to even go into it. If ever somebody can